And I mentioned to you earlier that on the Dave Charles show this morning, I would be introducing you to Samantha Cumming and that she might be bringing with her a little friend. Well, absolutely the way it is. And in the studio with me right now, it is good morning and welcome back to the 88FM family, Samantha. It's been a while since we saw you last.
It has. Good morning. Thanks for having me back again. I think it's been about 6 years now, Dave, yeah. But super excited to be back again. Yeah.
And I just to sort of to set the scene, for those that don't know you, who is Samantha Cumming?
Okay, so I am a teacher. I teach at Dolphin Coast Pre-Primary School in Ballito, a beautiful little preschool. And then I also am a snake rescuer. So if people find snakes on their properties or in their houses or their businesses, they give us a call and we go out and we safely remove and rescue the snakes from their property.
Most people have a built-in fear of snakes. It's a fact. Apparently, it's an ancient wired result of I don't know who the engineer was that designed the amygdala, which is the ancient reptile part of the human brain.
That's it, yeah.
But it's hardwired to respond to avoid conflict with reptiles. So you see something in the dark that looks possibly like a snake, you jump. Your heart gives you the boost that you need to get away. But that also comes with a kind of subset of fears and phobias and sometimes quite irrational. Do you find people sometimes are irrationally afraid?
I do find that. My thing is I find that people fear what they don't understand. So the more you learn to understand a snake's behavior and their role in the ecosystems, the less you will fear it. So what we do is we try and educate people as much as what we can while we are doing the rescues. We'll take time to speak about the species that we've removed. People are not generally born with fear. I think fear is, like you say, just something that's implemented, which is why I respect parents so much who, even though they are afraid themselves of snakes, they'll encourage their children to interact with the snakes that we have at demonstrations and presentations because they don't want to pass on that fear to their kids, which is great.
It is, and it absolutely, the work that you're doing with kids is super because I think it's fair to say that we're in an age of extinction. Many, many creatures in our lifetime have gone extinct and will go extinct, and often they are creatures that, because you don't know, you don't see, you don't care, but it leaves a void in the ecosystem that is so integrated and so interconnected and so interdependent. So this is important work. Now, you mentioned up front that you're an educator.
I am.
Tell us about that.
So what's great for me is I get to use my teaching experience and my experience with snakes and combine the two. So I get to teach people about snakes, which is great. So at Dolphin Coast Pre-Primary, where I teach, I have a class pet, which is this little guy, and I love teaching the children about them, but what I'm also very focused on is teaching them not to approach just any snake. So they are only to learn about the snakes that I bring to my class and touch the snakes that I bring my class, because obviously you don't want a little one walking outside and picking up any snake that they see.
Are kids not then hardwired to respond? Is it a learned response?
Yes, kids are curious. Kids will walk up and try and touch the snake, especially if they've seen one at demonstrations and presentations and things like that. So we try and distinguish between those that you cannot touch unless mommy and daddy are with you, and if you do see one, take a step back and either call mommy and daddy. We don't want them just going and picking up any snake that they see.
Okay.
So that's a very big part of the education that we share. And then obviously the role that they play in the ecosystem is vital. I mean, without snakes, we would be ridden with rodents and rats and mice, and I just can't imagine what the planet would look like without snakes.
Well, there's so much more to talk about. I'm going to get into that. We've got a couple of moments now to spend on, because this format gives us the opportunity to talk longer than we would on other shows. So the Dave Charles Show, you see, very, very, very special that you're with me, and I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation on the flip side of this.
All the Dave Charles Show, the world will fall. Tune the frequency to answer the call. Radio Lifestyle 88 FM.
Looking to add some happiness to your work or living space? Come and play at Redesign Interior's brand new showroom. Explore our inspiring design library filled with materials and finishes to spark your creativity. Browse stunning furniture, curtains, fabrics and wallpapers, and chat to Paige about your current projects over a cup of coffee. Visit us at Unit 3 The Quarter, Stewart Drive, next to Cafe Baba, or find us online at redesign-interiors.co.za. Redesign Interiors. Come and play.
In Tongaat, everyone's got a cousin who can fix anything. Tap leaking? Call Ravi. Car won't start? Call Ravi. Wi-Fi acting up? Call Ravi. He's good with phones. Next thing, the router's open and flashing like a disco. Rather, call Oxygen. Proper tools, quick installs, honest costs, friendly follow-ups. Oxygen Fiber. Let Ravi enjoy his weekend. Get connected at oxygen.co.za or WhatsApp us today. Minutes past 10 o'clock on a Thursday morning, and I'm in conversation with Samantha Cummings and her pet snake. What is the name?
So every year he gets a different name because every year the children in my class get to name him. So this year his name is Bubbles.
Okay. Yeah,
so this is Bubbles this year. He's a corn snake. They're obviously from the US. He's 100% harmless. He feeds on rats and mice. And he's very gentle with the children. The children love touching and feeling and holding him. He's pretty good with all of that. So great for educational purposes.
Won't you lift Bubbles up towards the camera
so
we can get a look at his beautiful
there
face?
There we go. These
because
Bubbles.
Wow, it is exquisite. Are these normally, I think, in the wild they're black and white?
That's correct, Joe. They're much darker in the wild, but obviously with the breeding and the morphs that you get now. I mean, this is an albino. You can see his eyes are red. So this is an albino.
And totally used to being handled by you.
100%. I've had him since baby, so I've introduced him to the children. So he's got used to all the touching and the feeling and the moving around. And he's fine with it, Joe. He's quite used to it by now.
You've had him from tiny,
and
that means that you've been feeding him from tiny.
Yes.
You have to feed snakes live prey, don't you?
No. In fact, that is actually quite frowned upon, feeding live, because of the harm that the rats and mice can actually do to the snake as well.
Oh.
So I know of cases where keepers have fed live rats and mice to the snakes, and then they walk away, and they leave the live rat in the enclosure with the snake, and the rat ends up biting the snake and causes a lot of damage to the snake's body. So most of the people I know only feed frozen thawed, which you buy at your local pet store, and they are specifically bred for snake feeding.
Frozen thawed?
We call them frozen thawed because obviously once they're the right size that you need, they're frozen, and then when we buy them, we just defrost them, and that's what we feed to them.
And what are those little pinky mice?
Well, it depends on the size of the snake. So when he was little, he ate little pinky mice, and as he's growing now, he's eating a large rat. So they grow, and obviously you up their diets as they grow as well. And obviously he sheds as he eats, he sheds and he grows.
And what is the lifespan of
I would say this one, it depends. If they're captivity or in the wild, I always think in the wild they'll live longer. In captivity, about 15 to 20 years, if not longer.
Okay.
In the wild, I like to think that they live longer. Obviously, we won't really know, but I like to think in the wild they live more peaceful than...
No, there's obviously two schools of thought diametrically opposed. Some say that the pet trade is just horrible, and I tend to agree with a large percentage of that sentiment because people don't understand the needs of particularly wild creatures that they try to tame down. And in the pet trade, apparently, there's quite a number of exotics that are caught in the wild and then trafficked and sold on, and that pet trade then perpetuates the trafficking of endangered particularly species. So we don't condone that. In fact, we frown on it.
Yes.
But in this case, these are captive bred snakes that are a bit like domestic animals.
Correct, yes. So that's the importance of having a great mentor, is you need somebody when you start out in this hobby who will teach you all these things that you mentioned.
And you say it's a hobby, so is it a hobby that you encourage people to participate
in? Well, not really encourage them to participate, but just to understand. And by understanding what we do and the hobby that we're into, it tends to pass on that respect for snakes, which at the end of the day is what we want, education, conservation through education, which is what we aim for.
It's an interesting thing. I have always, as a bleeding heart, been kind of anti-hunting, for example. I just find it to be quite, you know, an anathema, going out and killing things.
Yes.
But there is a case to be made, I think, to a large degree, people that enjoy hunting tend to be actually custodians of the land and the creatures that live in it. They tend to do more for conservation than bleeding hearts like me that just pop along for a game reserve trip now and again. So it is an interesting, it's a much deeper conversation than simply the surface. I'm dead against the captive breeding of lions to go and zap them. That for me is horrific.
Yes.
But generally speaking, and as I said, there's a case to be made for all of these things. Now, your hobby, which is an unusual one for anyone really, but particularly for a lady, how long have you been fascinated with snakes?
You know, about 15 years ago, Neville and Helen from Ndlunkulu Reptile Park came to our school, and they came and did a snake demonstration for us, and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified of snakes. I couldn't understand the beauty of them. I couldn't understand why people would interact with them. I just couldn't understand. And Neville invited me around to the park to come for a tour and come and learn more. And I think since that day, I've been at the park every Saturday since. It just sparked something inside of me. Like I said, the more you learn, the less you fear, and the more fascinating they become. And now I do snake removals. I keep my own. I keep rattlesnakes, black mambas, green mambas, cobras, just because I'm so fascinated by them. And they're all captive bred. None of them are taken from the wild and kept into an enclosure. They're all captive bred, and it's for educational purposes. So I like using my snakes that I have for educational purposes, yes.
And you do get called on to come out and help a family or some individual that's come across a snake in a difficult situation that they can't, because generally snakes want to get away. I don't think snakes want to come in and live with you particularly.
Yes, yeah.
But occasionally they get into an area where they are confined, and then possibly there is a conflict. So then who do you call? Well, in this case, you call Samantha.
Yes.
What is the most challenging rescue you've ever done?
It was actually the day after, I think, we went into COVID. At King Shaka Airport. They have these water reservoirs outside of the airport with these big white tarps covering them. And the gentleman phoned Neville, and Neville referred the call to me. And there was a black mamba, I think it was 2.8 or 2.9 meter black mamba, laying in the middle of this tarp of water. So as you went down this incline to step on the tarp, you would bounce, because obviously there was water underneath. And this black mamba was laying in the middle of the tarp. So I had to slowly, carefully walk across the water, across the tarp, and pin the mamba and neck it and bag it, and then make my way back up on the tarp.
And every the tarpaulin is giving
exactly. Every time I stepped down, the mamba came up, and when the mamba went down, I came up, and it was like bouncy, bouncy, bouncy all the way. It was a very risky call, but it went well. It went perfectly well.
And people have the notion, and I used to have the same idea, that the most dangerous of all the reptiles you'll encounter in the African bush is the black mamba, because they will attack. They will attack. Every other snake wants to get away. Mamba will go for you. I believe that's not true.
No, it's not. I always say the most dangerous snake is the one that you're trying to interact with.
Oh.
The most dangerous snake is the one that you're not leaving alone. That's the most dangerous snake. The most venomous snake that we have here would be the boomslang, not the black mamba, but the boomslang. The boomslang are rear fanged, so bites from them are very, very scarce, and the snake will only bite in defense. So if you leave the snake to go on his way, he will go on his way. But if you try and approach the snake or try and kill it, which we have in many, many cases, a gentleman actually got bitten twice the other day for trying to kill a black mamba, and the mamba bit him twice. Now, if he had just left it and moved away and called us, the situation would have ended much differently.
We're going to take another breather, and I'm going to come back and ask you the question that I'm sure many people want to ask, and that is, what happens if you are bitten? And, hopefully that's a question that you will never have to answer, dear listener, but you never know. Here's Rachel Platten. It's 10:30, and I'm in conversation with Samantha Cummings and her little friend Bubbles. Bubbles is corn snake from California or from America originally. And, you know, this is a captive bred and extraordinarily comfortable in your company, and that's full credit to you. I think reptile, any creature really, but reptiles in particular can pick up from you your vibe.
I think it's the way you behave with them. Like if you handle them calmly and you handle them gently, then they'll react the same way. But if you're pulling him around and you dragging him around and swirling him around, he's going to react to that. So as long as you don't restrain him and he can move about as much as what he likes and he doesn't feel threatened, then he's quite happy.
Has he ever bitten you?
No.
Oh,
no, honestly, no. I'm very, in fact, none of, okay, the one, my boa bit me once, but that was more a feeding response. No, I've actually never been bitten by any of my snakes.
The question, of course, that I posed before the break was, if in the unfortunate situation that you are bitten by an, you don't know, venomous or non-venomous, you don't know, how should one respond to that?
You know, and I know it's very hard to do, but I think the first thing you need to do is just take a deep breath and calm down, because the main thing is trying to keep your heart rate low. And also, depending where you are, if you are in an area that is close to a hospital, very close, get to Albolito or Stag Hospital immediately. Whether you know what the snake is or not. Remember, they don't treat the snake according to the snake. They treat the snake bite according to the symptoms, not according to what snake it was. So even if you went and you said a black mamba bit me, they will treat the symptoms. They don't have special black mamba antivenom. They treat the symptoms that the mamba caused.
And I believe that it's fairly frequent, well, fairly often, if you are bitten by even a venomous reptile, you may not get envenomated because the reptile might decide it doesn't need to give you a zest.
So a lot of people call that a dry bite. However, you don't really get a dry bite.
Oh.
What you would get is a bite that has not got enough venom to actually have an effect on the body. And that's what happens most of the time. A snake will not dry bite you or decide, no, I'm not going to use any venom on you. He'll still bite, but not inject full venom.
Okay.
So people who get, example, black mambas, we've had dry bites by black mambas before. The mamba will bite you, you'll feel it, but there will be no symptoms. And obviously there was not enough venom injected to actually have an effect on your body.
But you don't want to take that chance. If you're bitten
by
a black
mamba, you definitely don't want to.
Get to a place that is able to assist.
If you're bitten by any snake, get to a hospital, depending where you are. If you're like 200 k's or 100 k's away from the closest hospital, and you can confirm that it was a black mamba bite, put a tourniquet on, definitely. That'll buy you some time until you can get to a hospital. But if you can only confirm that it was a black mamba bite.
You see, different people give different advice, and I have heard from so-called experts, it imperative that you identify what has bitten you, and if you can, bring it with you.
No. Because chances are, when you try and pick it up to get it, to bring it with you, it's going to bite you again.
Yeah.
So no, you don't need to. They don't, like I said, they don't treat you according to what snake bit you. They treat you according to the symptoms that the snake has actually had on your body, the effects that the snake has had on your body.
And I believe there are various different, or there are certainly two main and maybe three types of venom, with this neurotoxic and cytotoxic.
And hemotoxic.
That's so
right,
there are
John.
Three.
Right. So we've got two antivenoms for those three different types of venoms. We've got the monovalent antivenom, which will treat your cobras and your mambas and things like that. And then we've got the polyvalent antivenom, which is different. That will treat your boomslang bites and your vine snake bites.
Which bite is the one that destroys your flesh? I believe a puff
That'll
adder.
A puff adder will definitely. It causes extreme necrosis. Very, very painful bite. You'll definitely require antivenom for that one, yes.
Mm. And unfortunately, because they tend to try to remain concealed rather than try to escape, it's just the nature of the beast.
Most of them are, because puff adders are so well camouflaged, most of the bites come from people that are stepping on them.
Exactly.
And then, of course, to breeders and keepers who keep them.
Yeah.
Most of the bites come from that as well. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So looking at getting back into the role that you play, you're an educator, you're a teacher at Dolphin Coast Pre-Primary, and your kids love you. Each year they get to name your snake. This year's have named your pet
My
snake.
Yellow group has named him Bubbles.
Bubbles?
Yes.
And do you find that there is a because certain cultures have a certain beliefs. I know, for example, that in traditional Zulu culture, certain reptiles are revered. Mm. Actually, it's considered to be incredibly, well, you have a visitation from an ancestor.
Yes, from an ancestor.
And that's lovely. I know there are other cultures that have different.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, do you find in the 21st century that people are more accepting of snakes?
Yes, I do, especially if I look at, like, the children in my class, the Zulu-speaking children in my class. There's not really a lot of fear there. They're always eager to come and try and see, you know, what would happen, and they're very curious, and the parents as well. So it makes me very proud. It makes me very happy to see that the different cultures are so open to all these new things that we're introducing.
Well, that is hugely encouraging, because you see these terrible things on social media where people are being terrified by snakes, a false snake, an imitation snake attached to them, and they run, and everyone laughs madly. But it really doesn't do your case any good at all.
That's why education is so important. And obviously, the rural areas unfortunately lack a lot of that, especially when it comes to animals and snakes. So their first reaction would be to kill it.
Yeah. How prevalent are snakes in wild places? Someone once told me that if you walked into an area of fairly virgin bush that hadn't been too disturbed, in any sort of square 100 meters of that bush, you would probably encounter, if you could see them, more than one reptile.
I agree, yes. I agree. It also depends where it is, the location, the ecosystem going on there, the habitat. Is there food? Is there water for the snake? If it's a thriving habitat and there's ample food source for the snake and water, then yes, you probably would. But snakes don't want to be seen, and obviously they feel the vibration. So when you come closer to them, they move away.
In the so-called eco-estates, there's been lots of excitement in terms of snakes that have been discovered, particularly pythons, because they are pretty impressive.
Yes.
And now the pressure is on because they have become too successful, and there are too many, and they're being relocated. Is that the case?
We must also first, let me just point out that pythons are a protected species. They're on the TOPS list, so you are not allowed to touch, address, capture anything unless you have a permit from Isimvelo, which all of us at Ngqungqulu Reptile Park do have. The eco-estates are thriving with these species. I want to mention names, but I'm not going to.
You can.
Okay, then Simbali. Simbali is probably the estate with the largest largest population of pythons. But also, we have another snake catcher who's busy doing a program. He's busy running with something where he's microchipping the pythons so he can keep track of them, which is great for conservation work.
Yeah.
So we are aware of all of this. The best thing to do, especially with pythons, is call us to come and relocate it, rather.
Okay.
Just because people tend to kill, again, what they don't understand.
Now, a while back, there was reports of a python on the loose in Balito, CBD, if you like, and fairly regularly spotted. And one was wondering how this python could get around, because, you know, it builds up area.
It's so big. Yeah.
Apparently, it was using the stormwater drains as a convenient.
And we must also remember Simbali. The fence line for Simbali is at the bottom of Balito. So we do often get calls for pythons in the bottom part of Balito because the Simbali fence line is there. So they're making their way out of the Simbali fence line and into Balito CBD.
Yeah.
Which is what's happening.
And then there are snakes that are quite comfortable living in an urban environment, and they actually apparently are pretty good for you in terms of keeping your garden free of things that maybe are not so good for you.
Yeah.
And often people, alarmists, see a snake and immediately respond, oh my heaven. What is your advice to anyone that comes across a snake in their garden?
You know, we have snakes that you can live with, and we have snakes that it would be rather better to have them removed. So like our garden house snakes, which are very common and very often found, if you're comfortable having that snake around in your garden, leave him to be, because he eats the rats and the mice.
Oh.
Your little spotted bush snakes and Natal green snakes, 100% harmless. If you're comfortable having him, let him be. They eat the little geckos and the little lizards and things. But obviously, if you're finding like a night adder, that's an amphibian eater, if you get a bite from him, he is venomous. It will cause pain and necrosis. So rather phone a snake catcher to relocate that one.
Okay.
So there are certain snakes that you can actually live with, and there's ones that you really shouldn't live with.
And are you comfortable getting a phone call from any time of day or night?
Anywhere, anytime. Neville is on. Neville and Helen are on 24 hours a day. I'm obviously in teaching in the morning, but if you phone the call center, Neville will go out immediately. It doesn't matter what time of day it is. Neville gets up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning and drives to Stanger to do snake removal. So we are literally available 24/7.
For anyone listening or wanting the contact number, do you have it?
I do. It's 082-561-4969. And that's Neville, and it's the Ndlontlo contact number for any snake rescues and removals, the call center.
And if you are keen to find out more about snakes, we've got the Ndlontlo Reptile Park is a fantastic resource. It's at the Sugar Rush Park.
That's correct.
I think there's a small entrance fee to keep the park going.
That's right.
And I encourage you to pop along and support them in the work that they do, but also to learn more about. They are fascinating creatures and a very essential part of the ecosystem. Nothing to fear here.
Nothing,
here be no dragons.
Dave, what we also started a while ago was a WhatsApp group. So what we do is we invite people to join our WhatsApp group, and then if they see a snake, they can post a photo, and we can identify the snake for them immediately and tell them whether it's okay to leave it be or if we should rather go out and remove it for them. So that's helped us a lot as well.
Oh, what is the name of that group?
It's called Belita Snake Identification, Emergency Identification. The group got so big that we actually now have three groups for that purpose.
Belita Snake Emergency. Okay. Yeah. So it's as simple as that. If you want to join, there are three groups going. And
that's it.
Maybe more to come because you can only have so many.
It fills
many
up pretty quick, yeah.
Yeah, but a good idea. And a very big thanks, Sam, for coming on and bringing your friend Bubbles. Won't you raise her one more time?
Sure.
Into
there
the spotlight so we can then look at that gorgeous creature. Wow. It's kind of a fashion accessory, eh? There we
it's
go.
Like a
you could wear her out any day of the week. Thanks for joining me on the Dave Charles Show. This will be
up
as a
so much,
podcast.
Dave.
And the show continues.